Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Leo is on vacation this week, but James Thompson is here. He is the creator of pCalc. That's an amazing calculator app for your iPad, your iPhone, your Apple Watch, even your Apple TV. This episode of iOS Today is brought to you by Casper, a sleep brand that continues to revolutionize its line of products to create an exceptionally comfortable sleep experience one night at a time. You can save $50 towards select mattresses by visiting casper.com/iOS today and using promo code iOS today at checkout. And by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans, introducing Rate Shield Approval. If you're in the market to buy a home, Rate Shield Approval locks up your rate for up to 90 days while you shop. It's a real game changer. Learn more and get started at rocketmortgage.com/iOS today. And by Qualcomm Snapdragon. According to Ookla, Android smartphones with Snapdragon 845 from Qualcomm had faster data speeds on AT&T and T-Mobile than non-Android phones with Intel modems, based on over a million real-world tests done in Q2 2018. See all the data for yourself at qualcomm.com/twit. Welcome to iOS Today. As you can see, Leo is not here. He is on vacation, but I took this opportunity to invite one of my favorite developers. So welcome, James Thompson, developer of pCalc from 42 and Drag Thing, a longtime developer, former Appleite. Is that what you called yourself? Appleites? Applers?
Something like that, yeah.
And now
Survivor, I think, is the word.
Oh, Hiver. Okay. Thank you so much for calling in all the way from Glasgow.
Oh, it's a pleasure. I was saying earlier, this is my first time on television, so I'm just somewhat nervous about it. But I've only done audio podcasts before.
Well, you have a face for video podcasts, James.
Oh, thank you.
So I wanted to start out just talking a little bit about you. I mean, I did ask you some of your favorite apps, and we will get to those, and they're all fantastic. And I learned about a few things that I'm excited to talk about. But first, I wanted to talk a little bit about you and how you got your start. I know pCalc, which is an amazing calculator app for iPad and iPhone and Apple Watch, it's been around for 26 years, almost 26 years. Is that
correct? Yes. Coming up for 26 years this December, which is somewhat disturbing, especially when you talk to people and you say how old it is and you can see their face saying, that software's older than I am. And sometimes they say it and sometimes they don't, but you can see it.
You can see it in their eyes. Yeah, back in the time of push-button phones, not rotary phones, not that old.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is... pCalc came out before the web. So it came out in 92, and the web was only really starting to pick up around sort of 94, 95. So, yeah, it's you know, this was something that was originally transmitted through, like, if anyone remembers the Infomac archive and other such FTP sites and things. So, yeah, I only registered the domain for pCalc, I think, in 96. So, yeah, it's got some history.
So I know we were both a little bit older than 26, but in 92, I mean, you were still young. Were you in college? Were you, how old were you when you started developing it?
I was, let's work this out. Oh, yeah, somebody who doesn't want to do maths live developing a calculator.
You were young. I don't want to say college age because you do things different. It's not necessarily called college, but.
I was, I would say university, but I was in the first or second year of a computing science degree at Glasgow University, which is coincidentally about 5 minutes away that way. It was a project. We'd done programming as part of our course, but it was sort of very general, you know, oh, process some text and stuff. And I thought, oh, I'd like to learn how to write an actual application. And yeah, so it was my starter application to figure out how to make apps.
So it wasn't like a calculator wasn't good enough. You just were trying to figure out what else you could do.
It was a bit of that as well. It was like, because if anyone remembers the calculator from back in sort of like the late 80s, early 90s, the calculator had something like, you know, 16 buttons, and it was just this very basic thing. And I wanted something that would work for stuff that would help me with my coursework. You know, there was a lot of sort of hexadecimal and conversions and binary and things like that. So I wanted to make something that would do that. So it was kind of dual purpose. You know, I was writing the thing that I actually wanted to use myself, but I was learning along the way.
And so were you a math major? Were you a programming and engineering major? What were you doing at University of Glasgow?
So it was computing science. I did do maths for the first couple of years. There's a story about that in that I originally started out doing, it was supposed to be a joint computing and psychology degree. So it was all about the psychology of computing, and which is, you know, the human interface stuff as well. And so that was the course that I did. And when I got there, they said, well, actually, the course doesn't exist. So you can do your psychology for the first year, but then you're going to have to drop it and you're going to have to take maths. And I was very sad indeed, because I very much enjoyed the psychology aspect. And to be honest, didn't really enjoy the maths aspect. And that was, I took the maths, and then it turned out I didn't actually use any of the maths that I had learned for the rest of my course. So there was a great loss there to the psychology world.
Well, it makes sense, because people say, oh, you don't need math because you have a calculator, but you need to understand, right? I mean, in psychology is all about understanding. So you need to understand in order to know what buttons to press on your pCalc.
Well, I mean, the pCalc actually came out of, it was a central heating control panel, and we had to design this for our human interface class. And it was an exercise in working out what would be a nice interface for something like this. And as part of it, I drew these little fake LCD digits and buttons. So I had them, and the thing was made in a HyperCard, I think it was. And so I had these digits and I had these buttons. So when I was looking for something to make, it was like, oh, wait, I could just reuse those. And that's kind of how it turned into pCalc.
So you were, was this when you were working at University of Glasgow? Because I know when you finished school, you started working there as well.
Yes. No, this was when I was a student. After I graduated, I had been such a pain to the system staff, because I was a student rep. And so there was always complaining about, you know, all the servers aren't set up, you should do this, you should run it like this. And so they sort of gave me the ultimate punishment for this, in that they gave me a job and I then had to listen to the students saying exactly the same thing to me.
So that was like the birth of the web when you were working there, right?
Yeah.
92,
yeah.
93, 94.
I started working there in 94, and I worked there until 96.
And so how long before you discovered the web until you decided to put pCalc on the web?
Well, pCalc was on pre-web. It was up on these servers. And then I was sort of following along, and, you know, we had this NCSA Mosaic web browser. And previously we'd used a thing called Gopher, which was kind of a predecessor hypertext thing. And the web took off really very rapidly. And it was a sort of discovery. Like, initially my discovery was playing with FTP software, and it was like, you could run this app, and then this app would let you get other apps. And this sort of blew my young mind. And then realizing that everything was out there and that I could indeed write something and put it out there as well.
So at what year did you start at Apple? I know that you went from working at University of Glasgow to working at Apple. What year was that?
That was 96. I'd put a thing in the README of all the software, which said, you know, I really wanted to work for Apple. And somebody at Apple read that. And I later changed that little bit to just say, be careful what you wish for. But yeah, so I started in 96, and this was in Cork in Ireland, because that was the sort of the European base where there was a software R&D team. And I was initially working on, well, I was working on a number of things. The first thing I worked on was, in fact, for Disney. It was a Disney print studio that was bundled with the performers. There was the Disney Magic Collection or something that it was part of. And we did two of those back to back. We did 101 Dalmatians and we did a Hercules one. And so this was, Apple had asked Disney to do this, and then Disney had asked Apple Europe to do it. So, you know, we kind of ended up working for ourselves kind of thing. But it was actually a lot of fun, and I learned a lot about programming and working in teams at that point.
So that was 96. Was that was Steve Jobs back at that point?
No. So I joined Apple right at the point. I mean, I had always wanted to work for Apple, but I guess I hadn't been paying attention, because as I joined, they announced losses of like $1 billion and my manager resigned, and then they started layoffs, and I was like, and they canceled the Copeland operating system at almost exactly the same time. So I worked on the installer for that for about 2 weeks, and then that was canceled, and it was just this time, this sort of void. And yes, lo and behold, about a year later, who would step back in was Steve Jobs. And then it was a period of, we should call it, very rapid change.
And you were still there at that time?
Yes, I was there until 2000. So I kind of rode that. So after the print studio, I worked briefly on macOS 10 Server. And then after that, somebody noticed that I had written DragThing, my old doc application, and said, would you like to write the doc for macOS 10? And I said, yes. And that was suddenly being shoved into a very bright spotlight. And that was, yeah, I started that. It must have been late 97, early 98, something like that.
So, yeah, we just skipped over DragThing. Tell us a little bit about what DragThing. So DragThing was pre-doc. Tell us what it is.
So DragThing is, depending on how you look at it, is an application doc. You can have tabs. You can have, multiple docs on different points of the screen. And it was inspired by a number of things. It was kind of inspired by the Next doc, as well as there was Mac software called the Tilery. And there was a lot of little launchers at the time, and Apple had just introduced drag and drop. And I thought, oh, that would be a good hook to use with this thing, learn about drag and drop. And so I made this doc, and it's 24 years at this point. the downside is that it is written using Apple's old Carbon technology, which has approximately 1 year left to live. So it's going to work in Mojave. And after that, I am not sure, because to make it work beyond that point, when it's the 64-bit future, it's going to be a complete ground-up rewrite. And I know the number of people who are still using it, and it is not a huge number, so I don't know if it's going to be financially viable, but I haven't made a decision there yet.
So we'll just say DragThing is. It's not a was yet. It is.
Yeah, it's an is, even if I've spent most of the last 10 years on pCalc.
And so you still own pCalc and you still own DragThing. They were never bought or acquired by Apple.
No. When I started working for Apple, one of the things that I got agreed to was the fact that I could work on them and I could still own them and I could do them in my spare time. That's not really a deal you'd get today working for Apple. But Apple bundled pCalc for about a year with the AnglePoise iMacs and other machines in the States, which was very nice. Yes, we kind of skipped over the history of what happened to me at Apple, but the short version is Steve Jobs discovered that I was working on the dock in Ireland and politely requested that I move to California or else. And I said, I would like to stay in Europe. And my manager said, well, let's just tell Steve that you did and you stay in Europe and we'll give you an office in Cupertino. And yeah, that went on for a year, and then I got another ultimatum, a serious one, to move over. And I didn't want to live in the States. I wanted to stay in Europe. And yes, so that was the point where I parted company with Apple, but amicably.
That's such a shame, I think, because, I mean, all of these products are designed that we can all work, you know, I mean, we're having this conversation right now, I mean, using Skype, not an Apple product, but but talking about Apple products from, you know, a very long way away, and you get to live where you want to live and I get to live where I want to live. And it's such a shame that he was so interested in you being in Cupertino.
Yes, the quote that he used to my manager, and I will doctor this quote somewhat, was, it has come to my attention that the engineer working on the dock is in freaking Ireland. He didn't say freaking.
Yeah, that is hard, because it is, I mean, that was 2000, 18 years later. It is impossible for people to live, I mean, not impossible, but it is very difficult for people to live in and around Cupertino right now.
Yeah, I mean, the Bay Area is super expensive. I mean, if I had gone over there and I had bought a house 20 years ago, mm-hmm. you know, I could sell that house and retire. Mm-hmm. But yeah, also, if I'd stayed working there, I don't want to think what my stock options would be worth now. It's not, I just don't want to make that calculation. But, you know, you never know these things. I did keep some stock from back then, so okay. I've got that in my back pocket.
But. Well, chances are we wouldn't be able to be having this conversation now either.
Yes. So. Yes, that's true.
So pCalc, I guess let's see if we've gone through the history. So you left in 2000 sort of unwillingly, and then did you devote your time full time to pCalc and drag thing at that point?
So at that time, myself and my wife, who was also working for Apple at the time, we came back to Scotland, in fact, to Glasgow, to where I was born. And we had a company already set up because DragThing was selling at this point. And at that point, DragThing was making more money than my Apple salary was. So that kind of made the decision not too hard. And we founded a limited company here. And we've done that full time ever since.
So you and your wife run the company?
Yeah. She makes all the sensible decisions and I make all the very daft decisions.
Familiar. Except I'm the one without the sense in my partnership. So pCalc, when did you build the Mac app for pCalc? You were working on it while you were at Apple?
Yeah, the original Mac app was the first app. That was the 92 and onwards. And that was, you know, back in the days, this was written on a Mac Classic and, you know, with the tiny screen, monochrome. And it went from there. And it pCalc was always the thing that I used when something new came along. I could port the code over and I could make a version of it on some other platform. So, you know, when Mac OS X came out, that was my first sort of Mac OS X app. It was, you know, rewrite it. It's been rewritten about five times. And it was a case of, you know, pick a small app to learn a new thing.
And do you remember how much it cost back then, the first version?
The first version was entirely free, as was a drag thing, because they were written as a kind of calling card to get me a job, which indeed it did. And there was a point, I think it was in 96, drag thing had been, it was coolware. And the idea was, you know, send me something cool if you like it. And a guy contacted me and he said, our accounts department doesn't really understand cool. Is it okay if we send you money? And I was like, oh, I'd never thought of that.
Money is cool.
Yeah. So, from that point, DragThing became shareware. And Peacock followed sometime after that.
So what are, do you remember some of the cool things besides money that people sent you?
Yeah, I got like original animation sales from the Pink Panther movie credits. I got, somebody sent me fossilized moose droppings. it was a wide variety of things.
That's amazing. So then it became shareware. I mean, that was a really different time. I recently talked to Ken Kashenda, who wrote the book, the Apple book, that he was at Apple, and which comes out today, that book. And, you know, he just really talks about the free software movement a lot, which I think we've forgotten a little bit. The Richard Stallman kind of free software. And it was creative selection. Thank you, Kevin. But I think that was really a different time. And Ken has this great illustration in his book of Richard Stallman in a candy store. And it's basically like he's running the cash register and, you know, it's free candy for everyone, but nobody's paying anything, but there's still someone there. And it feels like, I mean, this is such a different time now. Do you ever, how has it been for you being like moving through all of those stages of free software and the Mac App Store and now the iOS App Store and just charging and not charging? How's it been for you, that experience?
It's been interesting. I mean, back at the start when the shareware stuff was really at the height, you know, DragThing was $29, which, you know, an app on the App Store now at $29 would be seen as, you know, this, you know, super professional high-end app. There's been a kind of trend downwards of pricing, which is interesting. But also simultaneously, things have gone much more mainstream. So, you know, the number of people with an iPhone in their pocket or some iOS device who have got an account on the App Store is in the hundreds of millions. So it's a much bigger pool. So, you know, our income is roughly stayed about the same throughout all these periods. It's just, you know, we're selling more software slightly cheaper. Mm. But, you know, I wouldn't say it's been without its struggles. But, you know, for us anyway, the wider adoption of Apple products has been really good. I mean, it's like, you know, Apple, I remember the days when Apple was doomed, you know, when Apple was the underdog. And now they're a $1 trillion company. And I don't quite understand how that happened. But it makes it a lot easier for selling software.
And so the iOS app of pCalc is $9.99, is that correct?
Yes, it is. It's been $9.99 for 10 years. Wow. So I haven't changed the price.
And then what about for Mac? The Mac app.
The Mac is also $9.99. It was $19.99, but when the App Store came along, it was clear $9.99 was kind of the ceiling. So I made both versions the same.
And do you still feel like that's the ceiling? I mean, I see a lot of $24, $29 apps. And you say they're professional, but I think of pCalc as professional. I mean, I've had to buy my kids a bunch of scientific and graphing calculators. They're not cheap either.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to say pCalc isn't professional, and it is certainly a complicated piece of software, but it's harder. I think once you get above $10, then you're becoming ever more sort of a niche product. $10 seems to have worked about right for us. I'm not planning on going any lower, but I'm not planning on going any higher.
We had a question from the chat room. Digmax says selling to more people at lower cost must impact support. Does it?
You would think that, actually. And support has actually been less for us since the App Store came along. Back in the day, you know, you're effectively selling direct to people. And there was more of a customer connection there. Now, I don't know who it is who's buying my software. You know, Apple maintains the privacy of the customers so that they don't pass that on to me, which is good in some ways, but it means that I don't have that direct link. But it also means the customers, I think, don't feel that they have the direct link the other way. So the number of emails that I get has actually probably gone down from those days.
We can publicize your email address if you like.
No, let's not do that. Okay.
Well, I want to talk more about Peacock. I know you have a lot. You're constantly developing it. That's why, I mean, I feel like it's really totally worth it. And I want to talk about the hidden game in Peacock that we've heard about and also talk about your ads. But first, I want to take a second to thank Casper. They are the sponsor of this episode of iOS Today. Casper mattresses, you've heard us talking about them. You've heard Leo talking about them. They are a sleep brand that continues to revolutionize its line of products. They are a mattress that comes in a box. Right now you're watching Leo in his PJs, if you're watching this. This, James, is what you also get from a video podcast. Leo in his PJs unrolling his mattress. It comes in a little tiny box, and then it just expands on its own. And so this way, you don't have to go to a store and you don't have to lie on a bunch of mattresses. You can just try it out. And that try it out is one of the best features of this, because if you don't like it, they will come get it, and you don't have to deal with that. You can buy it easily online and completely risk-free. The Casper is an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the cost. I have one that I sleep on. My two kids sleep on the twin mattresses. They love it. Casper is revolutionizing the mattress industry by cutting the cost of dealing with resellers and showrooms and passing the savings directly to you, the consumer. Casper mattress is an obsessively engineered mattress at a fair price. Now, the original Casper mattress combines multiple supportive memory foams for a sleep surface with just the right sink and just the right bounce. Plus, it's breathable, and it helps you sleep cool and regulate your temperature through the night. A Casper mattress provides long-lasting comfort and support. We've had ours since 2015, and it still feels like a new mattress. You can buy it easily online and completely risk-free. Casper offers free delivery, painless returns, like I mentioned before, 100-day period. So try it out for 100 days. You will like it. You won't ask them to come pick it up, I promise you. I've never heard of anyone not liking it. Everybody loves their Casper mattress. Casper mattresses uphold the highest environmental protection standards, and they're made in the USA. Free shipping and returns to the US, to Canada, and the UK. Get a Casper mattress today, and you can save $50 towards select mattresses. I'm going to tell you how to save $50. This is the good deal. By going to casper.com/iOS today. Don't forget to add iOS today so that they know that we sent you there. And then enter that promo code iOS today at checkout. That's casper.com/iOS today, and enter the promo code iOS today, and you can save $50 on select mattresses. Terms and conditions apply. I am talking to James Thompson, creator of Peacock. And is your company called 42, or your company is called
TLA Systems, TLA, which is a company name I made up with two friends at university to get into trade shows. So it was a fake company standing for three-letter acronym systems. And once I was trying to come up with a name for my own company, I thought I would use it. So I bought the other two out. It started as I wanted to get into Apple trade shows, and they wouldn't let students in, but they would let you in if you had a company.
TLA, I love it. And 42, of course, is the answer to everything.
Yes. Douglas Adams was a DragThing user and a beta tester, and I added a number of features to DragThing just for Douglas. And so the Peacock has always had 42, because like The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy is my defining sort of text, and it always had 42 on the display, but now it's kind of a tribute to Douglas.
You should start charging $42 for it and see what happens.
When I was selling badges, like pin badges, uh-huh, there was a set you could buy, and it was $42, and you could there were only 42 made. So yeah, 42 is slightly too high for me, but
for now. For now.
Yes.
Well, with prices going down, I don't know. It feels like now we're in an upswing. It's like the real estate market, sort of, what you can charge for now. So tell us about the game in Peacock. Is there really a game, or do we have to
Yes.
find it?
Yes. If you make your way to the About screen on the iOS version or the Mac version, you'll see a little 3D spinning or 3D icon. This was how I started out, because I was trying to learn 3D programming. I And when I was playing around with it, it started with just an icon with like a light source going around it. And then I thought, oh, I wonder, you know, play with this physics stuff. And so you could throw bananas at it. And then about a month later, you could drive a little car around.
Oh.
So if you tap on that, and then, you know, if you tap on the banana in the top,
mm-hmm.
and then tap on the right hand side,
oh.
That oh. one, yeah.
More bananas.
Yeah. And then it was, there's a little, so if you press the reset, which is under done,
okay.
So get rid of those bananas.
Okay, I got rid of the bananas.
Yeah, so if you tap the screen again, there's a little car, I think, at the bottom, bottom right.
Okay.
Tap the camera icon.
Oh.
And you'll see a little car, and you can drive that around.
Oh, there's the car.
You can use the joysticks on the side.
Oh. I love it. This is way better than math.
And this is just level one, which is like a simple assault course, which you can drive around. There's a golden banana, and if you drive towards the golden banana and hit it, and I'll not ask you to do this on camera.
Okay, thank you.
there is a secret city that you can explore. So it kind of got a bit out of hand as a thing. It has a game center leaderboards and achievements, so people were competing to see how fast they could complete the various levels. The Mike Hurley of Relay FM got the high score for the year for completing level one, and I actually sent him a physical trophy for his birthday.
That's awesome. So these are the nonsensible decisions that you were talking about that you made.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
I can't justify it on a business sense, but I needed a creative outlet. I needed, you know, this was the summer of 96 and there was a lot happening in the world, and I needed something happy to play with. And it was learning how to do all that. There's also an AR mode in there as well. So, you know, you can create a PCalc calculator in 3D and sort of walk around it and push buttons on it and things like that.
So you said that you don't feel that you're not getting as many emails from people who use the program. So I did get a question from someone named AE on Twitter, and he or she asks, under PCalc conversions, the only variable conversion is currency, right? How long is PCalc included currency conversion? Would you consider adding something like conversion between current dollars and historical dollars in 10, 25, or 50-year increments?
That's an interesting idea. I mean, it's done it for about, I think it's about 5 years or something. Whenever I come up with a figure, I always find, double it because my memory is not that good. But I get all the data live from the European Central Bank. They have a currency feed. I don't know if they have a historical currency feed, but maybe they do. I will look into it.
Mm. So we got some questions. Evan Stone is a developer that comes and watches a lot of our shows, and he had some questions specifically about Xcode. Are Xcode and other tools that you use an improvement to older tools?
So I started out and I was using ThinkPascal, and ThinkPascal, one of the developers of that turns out to be Rich Siegel, who's the developer of BBEdit. Who's now a friend of mine. And I really liked ThinkPascal. It had a great debugger. And then after that, I had ThinkC and then CodeWarrior. And CodeWarrior was a big step up. And then we had to use Project Builder, which was the original name for Xcode. And that was kind of a step down. And I was kind of bitter and I wanted to keep using CodeWarrior. But eventually Xcode came out, and Xcode has been getting better and better, and it just does so much now. And I mean, the software back in the day, people will think fondly of it, but it didn't have as much to do. I mean, we're doing development onto all these different iOS platforms. And, you know, we've got the simulator where we can have, I can have like a virtual phone on my screen and all this stuff. So I have to say Xcode is the best.
So we didn't really cover when you developed the iOS app and whether you started with the iPhone or the iPad. What we just sort of stopped in the development of the Mac app. When did you...
It was day one. So I was on the store 10 years and a few months ago. And there was about 400, 500 apps on the store on day one. And I think there's about 2 million now. I've been riding the App Store experience from the very start.
So how did you get, did you know that they were going to create an App Store? Was it, how did you get, to be one of the first in the App Store?
It was a case of, when the iPhone first came out, they said, you know, we're not going to have apps. We're going to have, you know, if you can do stuff on the web. And then a year later, they changed their mind and they said, we're going to have an SDK. And the SDK was released in, I think it was about March or April. And we had until June, July to get an app ready. And I took the Mac app and sort of removed all the Mac-ness of it. And I was left with this core bit of logic. And I moved that over onto iOS and wrote a simple user interface around it at that point. And yeah, I had something ready right at the start.
And then were you on the iPad right away as well?
Every Apple product that's come out, I have been ready on day one. So iPad, Apple TV, Apple Watch, everything. Anywhere Apple puts this an SDK out, I will port Peacock to it because that's kind of what I do.
I guess I didn't realize that you had an Apple TV app. I know how we're going to spend our Saturdays, my family, the Apple TV.
It's very hard to find Apple TV apps because you can't link to them on the store. But if you search for Peacock, it's there. And it is now free because it wasn't really financially a viable product. But one thing it does have is it also has the about screen in it. So if you have a gamepad connected to your Apple TV, you can drive that car around with the gamepad and it's an awful lot easier.
Oh, I didn't even think about that. That is exciting. And then, of course, the Apple Watch. I've used the Apple Watch app.
Yeah. And, you know, the Apple Watch, I hear from people all the time that use it. You know, like they're in the supermarket or they're, you know, on a date or something and they don't want to pull their phone out. And yeah, I'm glad people find it useful.
And the widget, you have a widget as well. There was a little bit of, are you allowed to talk about some the controversy around the widget?
There was a brief moment of controversy in that, I released, this was, I think, iOS 8 days, 2014, I think. I released pCalc, and Apple had done a widget version of their calculator for the notification center on the Mac. And I thought, well, I'll do the Mac one for pCalc as well, because that makes sense. And I'll do the iOS one. And, you know, it was a bit tricky to sort of shrink it down into just a widget. But I did it. And Apple featured me on the store as, you know, a fabulous example of widgets. And a couple of weeks later, I got an email saying somebody from Apple is going to call you at this time. And I was like, oh, that does not sound good. And they said, effectively, widgets cannot perform calculations. And I had to remove it from the app. I had 3 weeks to do so or something like that. And I complained a bit on Twitter, I have to say. And this tweet got picked up by a number of people. And then eventually I was reading about it in like the UK Guardian newspaper and various other things. Because this was back in the day, I think, when the App Store was a lot more draconian on their rules. Things have eased up an awful lot. I believe it's since Phil Schiller took over. So this was this was a good story for people because, you know, it was like, oh, Apple, you know, draconian Apple is forcing developer to remove functionality that they toiled so hard to make. And a couple of days later, you know, this got like a lot of coverage. And then a couple of days later, I just got a quiet email saying, nah, you're okay. So, you know, it was a very stressful time. But the publicity was fabulous for us, I have to say. So, you know, I have to thank whoever made that decision because it paid for a new iMac and a holiday in the sun for us to relax afterwards. But yeah, it was a big thing at the time. But, you know, looking back on it, I think things are an awful lot better now. The App Store management is very, very much more relaxed. I say that, of course, and now the same thing is going to happen with what I'm doing for iOS 12, but you can quote me on that in a week.
So let's talk. I was going to talk about that later, but we might as well talk about it now. And you're referring to shortcuts, I assume, in iOS 12, which is now shortcuts, are they in the public beta or just the developer beta at this point?
I think they're in both. I mean, you don't get access to the shortcuts app by default, which is the thing that you can use to sort of create your macros. And that's, I think that's on a fairly closed beta.
Okay.
I said beta there. I should be saying beta. I've been Americanized. This is terrible.
You can call it beta. That's fine.
You can create the Siri voice shortcuts in the Siri section of the settings app. So you can do some things with it. But what I've done is I've taken the pCalc and I have stuffed it inside an extension inside Siri. So it's basically got the entire brain of pCalc sitting inside Siri. Right now, it's limited in the kind of things you can do because some of the shortcut stuff, you can't pass inputs in. So you can't say, you know, pCalc, what is 6 times 7? I'm hoping that's the kind of thing that's going to come probably next year. I think the iOS 12 had, I think they were quite public about saying that they've sort of reduced the scope of it a bit to improve quality on bigger features that they're working on. So I suspect the shortcuts stuff run out of time a little, but you can still do quite a few interesting things. So you can have, like, you can make a voice shortcut, for example, that takes what's on the clipboard, converts it using one of the conversions in pCalc, and then puts the answer back on the clipboard, things like that.
Oh. Will I be able to use my HomePod to do that?
I suspect you might be able to, actually. I don't own a HomePod, so I mean, if Apple would like to send me one, I'd be happy to try it. I think you can. I think they opened up the HomePod connectivity, but I don't know. Let's say yes.
Okay. So that, yeah, there isn't really such thing as a HomePod app.
No. At the moment, everything just will go through a connected phone. Or I think iPad.
Yeah. Yeah, not a lot. I would like to do some graphing calculations on my HomePod. So Apple,
yes.
send James a HomePod, please.
Okay.
Shortcuts, and you're just working as hard as you can and doing everything to be ready for iOS.
Yeah, because we've got like, what is this? This is the 4th, so 8 days. Until Apple's event, and it's very likely that the final SDK will come on that day. And then it's basically submit your app as soon as possible to make it there for day one of the store. And if you're very lucky and the Apple gods smile on you, they might feature you as a good iOS 12 app. And I'm hoping for that, obviously.
Is that all really you could do to be featured in the App Store? Just hope and cross your fingers?
Well, no, it is, yeah.
Make a good app.
Make a good app is really the way to do it. I'm assuming that if you're, you know, like a multi-million dollar company, you can pay Apple for some placement. But, you know, for the kind of features like when Nintendo puts an app on the store and it gets all the special treatment. But, you know, for the everyday developers, it's just a case of make a good app and try and get it noticed. And the App Store editorial people are very good, and they've been very kind to us, certainly.
And so do you, I know you usually go to the Worldwide Developers Conference, the Apple Conference for Developers. Do you usually go to these, you probably don't, the press events, the one that's coming up next week?
No, for a start, we're not invited.
I'm not invited to any of them, so it's okay.
No, I sit at home like everybody else and watch them live. And the thing that usually happens is during it, they will say something like, oh, and we've got a new Apple Watch, and now the screen is circular. And developers around the world just go, oh, no, because they know they have to adapt their apps for that. And they have, you know, days to do it. And there's always, you know, Apple drops some super new hardware. And sometimes there's been rumors, so you know, like things like with the iPhone 10, there was a lot of rumors around, you know, oh, there's going to be a notch and all that sort of thing. Or, you know, with the iPhone 6s, that there was going to be bigger screens. And you could kind of work that ahead of time. And so for this, it's a pretty safe bet that there's going to be, you know, bigger screen phones with a notch, maybe iPads with a notch. So I've been trying to make sure my code works for those cases, even though they're products that haven't been announced yet. But yeah, the one that worries me is a new Apple Watch with some different screen. And I think that's very likely.
Oh, you think a round screen?
I think, not round. It's not going to be round. I mean, there was a leaked product image that suggested that the screen is bigger and goes edge to edge, and maybe it has rounded corners or maybe not. It was hard to tell. So I think there's going to be some change there.
So rounded corners on the screen of the Apple Watch. What would you have to do to change your app in that way?
Well, it's a question of there's probably, if that's the case, and this is purely guesswork, that, you know, it'll be like the iPhone 10, and there's areas of the screen where Apple can say, don't put buttons in here, don't put content in here, stay away from this bit. So if there is something like that, that's what I imagine.
So I'm looking at on the iPhone app, on the iPhone 10. So you had to presumably move your logo because it would have been in the notch. Did you do anything? I mean, what else did you have to do to make room for the notch?
The stuff like, especially when you turn the phone sideways and things, you need to make sure if you say done on that screen. Yeah, you can see you have to move the content in a bit so that you're not hitting the notch. Like you don't want the numbers. You know, you can draw stuff in there, but nothing important. And you've got to move things up a bit at the bottom to leave space for the bar. And there's a fairly simple API, which just is called the safe area. And, you know, it just tells you don't put buttons here.
The safe area. So let's see. What else do you expect? As long as we're just guessing what's going to happen next week, do you have any other educated guesses what we might see?
I think the one real question is whether we're going to see any Mac stuff at this event or if that is going to be put to a further event, because there's lots of rumors about, you know, oh, there's some new MacBook Air, but not a MacBook Air. And I think it sounds like they've got a lot to talk about already in terms of iOS devices and watches and iPads. So I don't know that we're going to see Mac stuff. So that's my real, I wonder if that's going to be put to a separate event. You know, because there's a lot of Mac things that I would like to see announced. You know, I want a new Mac Mini. I've wanted a new Mac Mini for, you know, 4 years or something. Things like that. But I think, you know, new iPads without buttons and probably without headphone sockets. And, you know, we've literally seen pictures of the new iPhones. Mm-hmm. So we know what's coming there.
I know. It's all so boring and we're never surprised. We fight to find out everything and then we're like, of course, we knew it already.
That is one of the things for a developer watching these things, and especially for watching the WWDC keynote. There's that mix of, you know, anticipation and fear, you know, the fear that Apple is going to have, you know, Sherlock to your product. Mm-hmm. And I actually worked on Sherlock at one point. So, you know.
And there is no calculator in the iPad.
Well, every year I think it's going to happen and it doesn't happen. So, yeah, I'm quite happy. about that. And, you know, it means there's a lot of educational sites that are using pCalc, and I'm glad of that.
Why do you think they don't have a calculator on
the iPad? I think it's because if you take a calculator and you took like the standard phone one and you zoom that up to a full screen, it looks a bit silly. And I mean, pCalc's got more going on, so it uses the space slightly better. But the real usage, I think, for pCalc, well, one of the real usages on iPad is in split screen. So you can have the calculator down the side. So if you're in, you know, you're in another app and you're trying to work something out as you're going along, you can have pCalc beside it. I don't know why they haven't done it. I don't want to give them ideas or speculate on that in case they go, wait a minute, why aren't we doing that?
Well, because you've already done such a good job, they don't need to.
Yeah, while Apple has been lovely to us, the fate of third-party developers is not high on their list when they're coming up with a new feature. If it's something that's best for the platform, they'll do it. And if somebody's app gets Sherlocked along the way, then that's what happens.
You don't think that maybe somebody still feels bad that Steve made you asked you to move or leave Apple?
I think that entire management chain no longer works at Apple, so I don't think anyone does. I mean, like, we got pCalc bundled with the Macs, and this was like about a year after I left Apple. And that was, you know, there was no hard feelings. So,
well, I want to talk about your favorite apps besides pCalc. You had some suggestions for great apps, some that I'd heard of, but I want to hear how you use them because I'm sure it's differently than I use them or how Leo uses them and some that I'd never heard of that I'm going to use. But first, I want to take a second to thank our sponsor, Rocket Mortgage. Now, you've heard us talk about Rocket Mortgage. Rocket Mortgage can help you with the biggest decision of your life, which is buying a home, financing a home. Buying a home is hard. We talked earlier about how hard it is to live in the Bay Area. Rising interest rates. There's a lot of unpredictability when it comes to buying a home, and it's causing a lot of anxiety with folks. So our friends at Quicken Loans are doing something about that. They're calling it the power buying process. And here's how it works. Step one, answer a few simple questions. Very easy. I promise you'll know the answers. And then they'll check your credit for pre-qualified approval. They're going to check. They're not just going to give approval to everybody, which is good for you. Step two, Quicken Loans will verify your income, your assets, and your credit in less than 24 hours to give you verified approval. That gives you the strength of a cash buyer. And step three, once you're verified, you qualify for their all-new exclusive Rate Shield approval. Rate Shield approval locks up your rate for up to 90 days while you shop. Now, here's the best part. If the rates go up, your rate will stay the same. But if rates go down, then your rate also drops. Either way, you win. It's kind of it's this kind of thinking that you'd expect from America's largest mortgage lender. So if you're even thinking about buying a home, if it's your first home, if it's your 10th home, even if you're just sort of thinking that maybe in a year or two you'll buy a home, this is a good idea to check out Rocket Mortgage today. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/iOS today. Rate Shield approval is only valid on certain 30-year purchase transactions. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply based on Quicken Loans data in comparison to public data records. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. Go to rocketmortgage.com to find out more. rocketmortgage.com/iOS today, and we thank Rocket Mortgage for their support. Okay, so Authy. Now, I have used so many different two-factor authentication apps. I've used LastPass. I've used Google Authenticator. And my authentication process is a mess. When you mentioned Authy, I downloaded it, and I realized that I still had some apps connected to it that I no longer use it. Why did you use Authy as your two-factor authentication app?
Well, I mean, for a start, it's, you know, everybody should enable two-factor authentication for things. Because in this day and age, you don't want, even if somebody's got your login details, you don't want them to be able to log in. So I started thinking of all the sites that I would need to use. And I came across Authy, and it's free. It's very simple. It works with like Facebook, Google, Amazon, Slack, Twitter, Mastodon, whole bunch of things. It's just really simple to use. And it's like you try and log in on any of these sites and it says, you know, well, give us this 6-digit code. And, you know, you just click on the tab and you get the current 6-digit code for whatever site it is that you're on. I find it really, really simple. I've got it on my phone. You can back up everything. I mean, standard thing with free software, I don't exactly know what their business model is. But it's a very nice piece of software, and I'm happy to use it.
So do you, I use LastPass Authenticator mostly because I use LastPass, but some people say, well, if you're already using LastPass, you should probably use a different two-factor just in case LastPass is compromised.
Would you say that? Yeah, I mean, I could see that. And I use Apple's iCloud Keychain basically for all my stuff. Mm-hmm. And so that obviously doesn't come with the two-factor stuff. I mean, there's a lot of good advice out there, which you should seek out about the best ways to do two-factor authentication. I mean, there's things like sites that use your phone SMS codes for two-factor are somewhat weak because if people get hold of your phone number by some nefarious means, then they can have access to all the things that you would use two-factor for. So, you know, don't do that and use an app like this.
I feel like the best two-factor for me is my Apple Watch because, I mean, it's on my wrist and there's a password, you know, or my face, if I'm using Face ID. I don't understand really why I need a third.
There's multiple different things. There's like, you know, being able to unlock your phone, you know, that's locked with some biometric stuff. This is like, you know, there's a password, a leak of some site, and maybe you have foolishly used the same password on multiple sites. And, you know, people will start trying to log into all your sites using these things. And it's, you can't have enough security, really.
That's true. You can't have enough security. That's good. This second app is something I'd never heard of and I love. It's called Sync Solver. So it syncs your data between between Fitbit and the Apple Health app. And I love this because I've tried Fitbits, but then the fact that, you know, I didn't think I could sync them so that my iPhone had no idea I was working out when I was using a Fitbit. My Apple Health app had no idea. And, you know, for me, if I don't get the points, then what's the point of working out, right?
Yeah, so I'm currently, sadly, on a diet. And because, you know, there are some downsides to working for yourself from home. Mm-hmm. I've got a Fitbit Aria scales, which are very good. You know, you stand on them, it recognizes the person and just uploads that data pretty instantly to Fitbit's cloud. But I want that data in HomeKit. You know, I want to see my health records there as well because my Apple Watch stuff is there. And this set of apps, the Sync Solver, lets you move data from one to the other, and it lets you take data that you... There's another app which I think does comma-separated files. So if you've got data in some form that you can get it in. So one of the things I did was I had health data in like weight data going back 20 years, and I put all that into the Fitbit stuff, and then I synced it over into the health kit as well. So I can look at my weight on a 20-year scale and see quite how much I have to go on my diet. But yeah, I don't like having my data siloed into somewhere where I can't access it elsewhere. And it would be very nice if Fitbit supported Apple's health kit stuff. But until they do, this is a very nice app for getting stuff out.
Now, you said that your scale recognized when it was you and
yeah.
Someone else. How does it do that?
It does it by looking at, it knows the weight of the person the last time they got on, mm-hmm. and assuming that you get on it fairly regularly, it makes an educated guess. You know, if you have two people in the house that weigh exactly the same, then it's going to be a problem. But if there's a couple of, you know, I was going to say kilograms, but, you know, one of your units difference between, then, you know, it makes a good guess. And it's only very rarely, like if I haven't stood on it for a while, I stand on it and it says JT question mark. Like, what happened?
A judgy scale. No one needs that. Yeah.
That's why I stopped using the Wii Fit, because I stood on that balance board once and this little Fit Piggy came up and it was like, you know, what happened? You were watering wrong. And I'm like, don't be so judgmental. And I never stood on it again.
Exactly. Yeah, the Apple Watch is so positive. Like, you can do it. You did great last 2 weeks ago. Why can't you do that again, basically?
I like the positive reinforcement rather than the negative aspect.
Exactly. Now, you don't wear a Fitbit. You wear an Apple Watch.
No, I wear an Apple Watch. My wife wears a Fitbit and... Yeah, I mean, I like their stuff, but the Apple Watch, you know, is more convenient for me because it does a lot more.
And would Sync Solver also work with the Fitbit if you wore it as the wearable? You could transfer that?
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah, you can specify all the data and you can pull out, you know, just some categories or all of it.
And that's $4.99, I think.
And I think there's a bundle to get all the apps if you want.
And Just Press Record, that's another of your favorite apps. What do you love about this app?
So Just Press Record, I should state, is written by people I know in Scotland, Open Planet Software, who are up north. And it's the best app I've found for just, as the name says, you know, when I'm recording podcasts and I want a backup recording, you know, I use their Mac app and I just have that there and it just records in the background, just an extra, you know, in case Skype messes up or something. Their app can do, it can hook into the dictation APIs and it can give you like a transcript of what you've been saying. And it syncs it across all your devices. It's really simple. It is bulletproof. You know, I've never had a problem with it. You know, if you have a need for like audio recording or transcription or something, it's definitely worth a go.
I love it. I mean, it's a great. I just love the idea that you don't have to think about it. It's on iCloud no matter what, and you can get it anywhere you want. I haven't had to use it for spying on someone yet, but I'm hoping to have that opportunity at some point to record someone saying something.
Discreet recording on your Apple Watch or something. Okay.
I'm hoping. I mean, that's going to be, you know, I'm going to break some big story. Not yet, though. Obscura 2. Now, that says, it's 2, not 3, right? Obscura 2.
Yes, it's 2, yeah.
Okay. And that's a photography app. Tell us about that.
Yeah, this is a sort of pro camera app. I mean, if you think of an SLR camera with all its little dials and wheels and things, that's basically what you're getting here. It lets you, you know, do raw photography and get access to all the kind of little settings that the Apple camera app doesn't let you do. And one of the things at the moment, this is written by Ben McCarthy in Ireland, and he is doing a promotion with Apple currently. If you go to the Apple Store app, not the App Store app, in the Apple Store app, there's a Discover tab. And if you scroll down, you will find a little feature on Obscura and you can get it for free. And if you do get it for free, there's some in-app purchases for extra filters and things. And it would be nice if you gave a little more money back to Ben, because I believe he's not making any money out of this promotion with Apple. This is to get Obscura known to the world. And it's a very good app. And you should, you know, it's free. Give it a go.
So you have to go to the Mac App Store to get this?
No, you have to go to the Apple Store app on your iOS device.
Oh, the Apple Store app on your iOS.
Like the one that you, if you're trying to buy a laptop type app. And yes, they occasionally in the Discover tab, they have these little promotions, which is a bit like the sort of cards you get in Starbucks to give you an app or something. So somewhere in the, if you tap discover and then scroll down, somewhere in there you will find a little thing on Obscura. Maybe after that, keep going. Oh, I hope it's there somewhere. After me saying
there's
this.
Your HomePod you can buy. There it is. Yeah.
Download exclusively for you. Oh. Download for free. And you get, basically it gives you a little promo code that transfers you over to the App Store app and then gives it to you. I saw he had very significant number of downloads through this promotion. So I hope it does well for him. And I hope that once it's no longer free, people will actually give him money and buy it.
I think that I think I had the first one. So if you already have
it. I think Obscura 2 was a paid upgrade. So, okay. Yes.
Oh, awesome. That's a great deal. All right. I also asked you about accessories, and you said you like to listen to stuff in the shower.
Yes. I listen to podcasts in two places. One, when I'm lying in bed trying to go to sleep. Not saying that podcasts put me to sleep, but, you know, I like a nice soothing voice to send me to sleep. But the other place is in the shower, and I needed a waterproof speaker, and I got as a present a UE Boom 2, Ultimate Ears Boom 2 speaker, which I've used for a number of years. And I noticed when I was looking around for things to talk about, that day they had just announced the Boom 3. I don't have one yet. I don't know that I can justify buying one now that I have a 2, which works very well. But it's the 2, it's, you know, it's got a battery in it, so it's not like a HomePod where you has to be mains powered, and it's waterproof. So you can charge it up, and it sits on my shelf in the shower. One of the very nice things about it is that you can switch it off and on from your phone, from the app. If you forget to switch it off or something, you know, you don't actually have to step back into the wet shower and push the button on the top. And it, the new one, I think, does wireless charging as well. It's got like a little dock that you can put it on. So I haven't tried the 3 yet, but it looks very nice. And this one's got a bunch of new features. It's got this magic button on the top, which I think you can set it to like automatically play certain Apple Music playlists and things just by pressing one button. It's very nice. It's a lot cheaper than the HomePod. I'm not sure the exact price on them these days, but because it was a present for me. There you go, $149. So it's a bit cheaper than the HomePod, shall we say. But it's a very nice little speaker, and I've enjoyed using it and listening to everybody through it. Great sound quality.
I might need to get that, because right now I have the that is the Amazon Echo that's outside of, it's in the bathroom, outside of the shower. So I can change podcasts by screaming, but it's not fun to scream, and I have to turn up so loud. My family does not appreciate it very much. It's mostly podcasts that I listen to, too.
Yeah. What's your shower podcast of choice?
Well, I do the Flash Briefing, usually, which means that I can listen to a series. So I'll listen to, we have the Twit Flash Briefing, and then I listen to the NPR Flash Briefing. I listen to the Relay FM Flash Briefing, which is great. What else? The Daily. Just news and tech. What's your shower podcast of choice?
Again, the Relay FM podcasts, I listen to quite a few of those. Upgrade is probably my favorite. There's a video games podcast called the Giant Bombcast, and it's got a spin-off one called the Giant Beastcast, and there's another video games one called Waypoint Radio. And Waypoint Radio is probably my favorite gaming podcast at the moment, although it goes back and forward between those two. I don't listen to as much tech podcasts because, you know, I'm in tech all the time, and I sometimes want to not be in tech. and listen to something else. And so video gaming is a hobby, which I guess it is tech related, but you know, it's a nice escape.
It's tech adjacent. Yes.
Yes.
I also appreciate the Waypoint podcast. I'm not a gamer. My son's 7th grade English teacher told me about it because we were discussing Black Panther, and after Black Panther came out, they had a great episode about it, and I listened to it, and then I subscribed because it's, you know, I don't really follow gaming very closely, and I don't play very many games, but it is a good podcast, even for non-gamers.
Yes, it's a very, I mean, I don't want to say intellectual podcast because that sounds like it might put people off, but they talk about things. You know, there's Austin Walker, who's one of the main hosts, who runs the Waypoint Gaming at Vice. He comes from an academic background, talking about games. And so they have much more in-depth conversations about things than this game's good at, you know, it's good for shooting people or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's a much deeper thing. And they also touch on wider sort of social issues and things. Mm-hmm. So, I find it fascinating. It's also, they regularly have women on their podcasts, mm-hmm. you know, regular hosts. And that is surprisingly unusual in the gaming podcast world. And it's nice to have other perspectives.
Exactly. Well, there's the good Georgia Dow and Brianna Wood. I don't know if they still do it, but they used to do a gaming podcast. But yeah, that it is true. And I didn't want to put people off saying it was recommended by a middle school English teacher either. It's true.
No, I mean, it's a really good games podcast. And two of the people, Patrick Lepick and Austin Walker, previously worked for this Giant Bomb website, which it was a website that was formed when Jeff Gerstmann, who worked for GameSpot, he wrote a review that was very critical of a game that was paying for advertising on the website, and they basically told him to change it, and he resigned and he started his own site. And then sometime later, they actually got bought back by the company they were working from. But it's a very, it came from a place of sort of authenticity, and a lot of the former GameSpot people went to work for him, and Austin and Patrick worked for them. They did some time there as well. And I find them the best analysis of the video game world. And it's also fascinating to listen to them because they're based in San Francisco, and the tech world and the gaming journalism world, they kind of like are these parallel universes. So they were going to, you know, Moscone West for GDC. So it's all the same places where WWDC was. And, you know, they talk about things in the Bay Area. And it's like, I kind of feel I should know these people, even though I'm not in that world at all. But it's just because we have so much in common.
Yeah. Well, I usually don't ask guests to recommend a podcast, but I think I will, because that that was useful. That, because you don't have a commute, you have to listen to your podcast in the shower. Podcasts will find a way.
Yes. I mean, that I can't listen to podcasts while I work because, you know, I've only got one language center in my brain. And if I'm listening to words, I can't type code. And, you know, so I have to listen to music, and generally instrumental music works best for programming. I'm very limited in my podcast time. But there are also some video games which you can put a podcast on while you play it. Mm-hmm. I'm currently playing No Man's Sky, which is very soothing, sort of explore the universe and build yourself a nice house while listening to people on a podcast.
I want to get to our AppCap, where we get to wear hats.
Okay.
But I wanted to ask you about the subscription versus paid apps. I know your apps have you ever experimented with the subscription on your app?
No, the closest I got to experimentation was when in-app purchasing came along. I did Peek Out Light, which is free, and that has you can buy all the functionality in pieces. So say you just want the nice themes, or say you just want the engineering mode or something like that, you can just buy that piece. And that was an experiment in the early days of seeing if that's where the market wanted to go. The market didn't really want to go there. And subscription stuff, I know for myself, like I pay for the Adobe Creative Cloud subscription, and that's quite a lot of money. And I resent that being a subscription, but that's the only way to get it. And I need Photoshop and Illustrator for my work. And I would rather buy the apps and own them outright and decide when I upgrade. You know, maybe I don't need to upgrade every year or every major version. Maybe I'll do every second one or something. And subscriptions, I feel, you know, Apple like subscriptions, developers like subscriptions from a business point of view, because I would love to get regular income from all the people using my app. But I don't think customers really like it. And I think customers will only, maybe they might pay for a couple of subscriptions, but would you pay a subscription for every app that you have on your phone? I don't think so.
What about like a Netflix for the App Store or whatever? Have you ever thought that that was something? Have you ever heard?
I have thought of this many years ago, and I find the idea absolutely terrifying because it is exactly like, you know, the Apple Music or something like that, or Spotify. And you don't hear artists saying that Spotify has been brilliant for their bottom line. Mm-hmm. You know, this is a move towards people not owning stuff, but just streaming it. If you got to the point where apps were like that, I don't think I would make the income that I make today. I could see maybe Apple doing it. You know, you pay Apple $10 a month and you get access to a range of apps that they've decided. I mean, there's the set app thing on the Mac, which is basically that. But I'm very resistant to going down that road because I feel we've devalued apps. I don't want to devalue it the same way we've devalued music and movies and everything else. Mm-hmm. So it terrifies me, but it might happen.
I mean, is there any way you could imagine it? Like, I think of Netflix, the way they're creating original content, or the way Amazon is creating original content, where they're paying these creative people a lot of money to create for their platform. And could you ever imagine a way in which Apple would do that for app developers?
Believe me, if any trillion-dollar company wanted to give me lots of money, then I'm 100% open to discussion. I don't see it quite happening in that way because, I mean, there's so many apps out there. You know, it's, as I said, it's gone from 500 to like 2 million. I don't know. It's probably 3 million by the time we're talking. And, you know, getting onto that list of blessed apps would be very hard. I mean, Peekout might have a shot. It is well known, but I don't think that that would do the app marketplace any good. I think, you know, that would just be you're either in that store, you know, you're in that subscription store or you're nowhere. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, would lock out a lot of people.
Now, we have a lot of people that watch the show who use iPads and Android phones. Have you ever considered developing for Android?
I have not. For the same reasons that I have not done a Windows version, I only know Apple stuff. You know, I've done Apple things all my life. The code for Peekalc is very Apple specific. So if I wanted to make a version for Android, I'd have to write it again from scratch mostly. And that's not my area of expertise. I've also heard from developers that do stuff for both platforms that Android it's harder to sell apps there. It's a lot easier to make money on iOS. So, you know, if it was easy to do, I would certainly consider it. But at this point, I don't have the skills to do it. And, you know, I think my time is best spent concentrating on Apple platforms.
So if anyone's listening to this who is an aspiring developer or a current developer, what advice do you have for them? I mean, your situation seems amazing. You support yourself with this one great app and another app that you've created that is still alive. What suggestions or what recommendations do you have for people who want to be successful independent developers?
Well, the most important thing is to ship something. you know, even if it's just, you know, write something simple, go through the whole procedure of getting it on the store. Because once you've done that, you know, that there's such a sense of achievement from putting something on the store and being able to, you know, point at it and say to your, you know, friends and family, it's like, look, I made this. This is available here. And it doesn't have to be the, you know, the best app in the world, but actually doing it and shipping something is really important. You know, don't be discouraged by the fact that there are, you know, there's an existing app that does something similar to what you want to do. You know, you can make your app better. You know, there's probably hundreds of calculators on the store at this point. And I don't look at them. I just, you know, try and make pCalc the best that I can make it. There's a lot of good resources out there that weren't there when I started doing stuff. You know, there's the... The Ray Wenderlich's got a website with lots of good examples on doing stuff. When I was doing things with 3D graphics, that was a great help. Stack Overflow, you know, literally any question you ask, there will be 10 wrong answers and maybe one right answer on Stack Overflow. But it's a good resource. And Apple has lots of sample code and things out there. There's a lot of stuff you can look at to learn. And you know, you can also ask people. There's a good community on Twitter and now somewhat on Mastodon as well. And, you know, if you're stuck on something, you can always ask people. There's a good, there's forums on Apple's developer site as well, which are a good place for asking as well.
We're going to get to our app, Cap, your favorite current app, my favorite current app. But before that, I want to take a second to thank Qualcomm, who is the sponsor of this episode. I mentioned we do have people who use an iPad and an Android phone, and we love them. And Qualcomm Snapdragon wants to help you get faster data speeds on your phone. Everyone wants more speed because waiting is annoying. Everyone hates it. Whether you're waiting in line, in traffic, you have one bar of signal and it's taking forever to finish downloading your music playlist. You can get faster data speeds even without switching carriers. All you have to do is have the right phone. Ookla analyzed over 1 million real-world results from the speed test app. You've used the speed test app. Leo talks about it all the time. Taken by users like you on AT&T and T-Mobile in Q2, and they found that Android phones with Snapdragon 845 from Qualcomm Technologies had up to 192% faster data speeds than non-Android phones with Intel modems. 192% faster data speeds. You heard me right. And the Snapdragon 845 mobile platform is engineered with powerful features that allow you to do even more with your phone. Immersive XR experiences. The third generation Qualcomm Hexagon 685 DSP supports sophisticated on-device AI processing, delivering richer camera, voice, XR, and gaming experiences. Advanced vault-like security. It's designed with a new Qualcomm secure processing unit that's engineered to help protect personal data. Biometrics used for authentication can be stored in isolation, keeping precious data out of all those prying eyes out there. It's energy efficient and engineered for all day battery life, capable of up to 50% charge in just 15 minutes. So check out all the data for yourself at qualcomm.com/twit. That's qualcomm.com/twit. Then upgrade your data speeds with a phone powered by Snapdragon 845. Qualcomm.com/twit. And we thank Qualcomm Snapdragon for their support of iOS today. I have a hat. It has a P on it for pCalc, but it's really okay. For Petaluma Little League.
So I have a hat, and it has Clarice the dog cow on it, who was from the, some people may know it from the printer dialogue, some people may know it as the mascot of Apple's developer technical support, mm-hmm. who help developers like me solve their problems. But there also used to be in the icon garden outside Infinite Loop, there was a giant dog cow. And yes, it's a mascot of old school Apple people.
I love it. It's great. I feel like it's also in there. There was a museum recently, maybe in the computer museum. They had some Apple designs in there, and I feel like the dog was part of that.
It's a Susan Kare design.
Yes.
It's famous amongst certain people, I would say. Yes. Apple gave out one of the pins that you could get at WWDC this year was, if you were very lucky, you could get a dog care.
And did you?
I did.
Susan did the Happy Mac too, right?
Yeah, yeah. This was the most appropriate headwear I could find.
Well, this was the only hat we had that had a P on it for P-Calc. It's not your logo. It's the logo of the Petaluma Little League who went to the World Championship in 2013, I believe.
I appreciate it. And I'm now thinking, oh, maybe I should do hats. Badges and I've done T-shirts. I'm wearing like the P-Calc Pride T-shirt currently.
Hats. I will buy one and wear it on this very show because we haven't gotten enough of you yet. So tell me about your favorite. Is this your favorite app of all time or your favorite current app?
This is a favorite of the moment. This is an app called AudioKit Synth 1. And to give you some background, before I started, when I bought my very first Macintosh, my classic, in order to afford it, I sold all my classic analog synthesizers, and I've regretted that ever since. But apps like this let you have a very sophisticated synthesizer on your iPad, and you can plug keyboards into it, and you know you can play on the iPad itself. And this is a very sophisticated app, but it is also A, completely free, and B, completely open source. So if you're looking on how to make an app, you can actually just download the source code for this whole thing and you can play with it and you can do what you like with it. And this is a lot of people, we talked about open source earlier, and this seems to be an excellent example of a community working together to make this synthesizer. And it's really nice. There's some really great sounds, presets on it. If you go through all the presets, there's some that sound very, very 80s, which is exactly what I like in a synthesizer. You know, just make me feel like I'm watching some action movie from the mid 80s. I'm not the world's greatest musician. In fact, I would probably not describe myself as a musician, but I absolutely love messing around in Logic and with synthesizers like this. I have probably bought more synthesizer apps for my iPad than I have bought any other kind of app because the iPad is just perfect for it. And I've got a little keyboard which I can plug into it through the USB adapter and just sit there on headphones and noodle away on that. And, even though I've paid lots of money for apps, this one is right up there with them and is free. So nothing to stop you if you fancy just making some noises, download it, have a play. And if you are thinking about development and you want to see how apps are made and, you can download the source code and play with it and have a look. And this is ongoing development. There was a big update a few weeks ago, which is why I was playing with it recently. It does two things, it's for musicians and for programmers.
That's great. I know before I was talking about how the free software movement was gone, but it's not. It's still very active.
Yeah, all your Macs and phones and things, it's all based on open source underneath. It is rarer to get like an app for consumers like this that's open source. Typically things tend to be slightly more technical. I mean, this is technical. There's a lot of dials and sliders there, but it's very rare to get a full iOS app like this that's open source.
Well, my favorite app that I'm using this week is another app that I'm trying to use to control all the projects in my life. And I feel like I should use this app to control all the to-do apps I have. But this is Agenda. Have you tried Agenda?
No, I definitely need something to control my life because, especially in the run up to the new OS releases, it's a bit stressful and I've got quite a few things on my plate.
So Agenda is an iOS app and a Mac app. And you know, of course, you can sync across both. And what it does that's different than maybe some of the other to-do apps or tasks app is it syncs with your calendar, which is nice. So if I wanted to create a new project, let's just take a look, and I can create a new project called Clean My Room. And then I can add notes to it, clean up the floor, and then I can also sync my calendar. So I will probably do this on Sunday. So I can add a date and assign the date, and I could also see what else I was doing on Sunday. I only have a run with Heidi at 9, and so I can spend the rest of the day cleaning my room, which is nice, because then if you're going to say assign a task to a certain day, it's nice to know what else you have on that day. Also, if you like me forget all the notes that you took, I can see, okay, well, I have this interview with James today, so I'm gonna what notes did I take? Oh, here it is. It's under the project My Favorite Developers, James Thompson. Aww. And then I have his everything that you did, so I could just look up there, and you can make it prettier. I like the way it's designed, Agenda.
This seems way better than the pieces of paper, which is how I currently organize my life. I write stuff down on notepads and lose them, and yeah. Well, I think I should check that out.
If you're a paper and pen type person, I'm sure you've been told of the bullet journal.
I have heard of the church of the bullet journal. I have not yet visited.
Yeah, COBJ. Yes, that's us, Church of the Bullet Journal. I love the bullet journal, but everyone makes fun of me because what if you lose it? And but I haven't yet. I'm knocking some wood. And of course, you can take pictures of it, and you can add those to Agenda. But it is, nothing's ever good enough. I have to continue to search. And it was interesting that we were talking about the price of apps. This one is not cheap, but they have the Mac and the iOS app together, which is $24. And there is that idea of, well, I paid $24 for this, I'm going to use it like a gym.
Yeah. Yeah. Hopefully not like a gym in that, you know, you continue paying for it.
Keep
thinking
not.
You should go.
Yes, exactly. But it's like, you know, that idea that when I'm sure that a lot of your users agree that, well, you know, I want to be serious about, you know, calculations or whatever it is. I want to be serious about my agenda and organizing my life. I'm going to put money towards that and do it.
Yeah. I like that you say be serious about it when I'm adding stickers of pandas to my latest version.
Well, so can I don't know if I'm using the most updated beta here. I'm not on the developer beta here. So let's see. I know you sent me the beta version of pCalc.
If you have it installed, you should see it in messages. Just look for a little smiling panda in your stickers, like if you cover up your whatever messages you're actually.
Let me make sure. Yes, this is just a conversation that I'm having with. There is that them? The messages there? Oh, yes. Now you can show my screen. These come with pCalc?
These are going to be in the new version, which is coming out in a couple of weeks for iOS 12. And these are drawn by David Langham, who's done a lot of artwork. You might know him from doing some of the very early Facebook stickers as well, Beast and Bun and people like and stickers like that. And he'd never done a panda. He'd done a red panda, but they're not the right kind of panda. And I realized, wait a minute, I could just pay him money and make him do this panda, because this panda was one of the alternate icons you could pick in pCalc last summer when I added 45 alternate icons because I went slightly mad. he did one of them, and then he drew an expanded version for a t-shirt, which I did for WWDC this year. And then I thought, right, I want him to do a full set of stickers, and they're free with the next version of Peekout that's coming out. And we've kind of collaborated back and forth over the summer on these. I did the animation on some of the stickers. Generally, any of the stickers where the animation is not quite as good, that's me. But that was just a fun thing to learn how to do 2D animation and things like that.
So you did the animation with the hearts. I like to send stickers.
No, I didn't do the hearts. Oh, you didn't. He did the hearts.
Oh,
I did. He did the fire as well. And as I said, all the good ones he did. There's one, I don't know if it's in the build you have, but the first panda's waving. Oh, I did that one.
So I did the weight lifting. That's you.
I mean, he drew it. I animated
it. Yeah, that's good.
Just to be clear. But and he was not offended the fact that I did some animation, which was even better.
That's exactly how I lift weights, by the way.
Yeah. The panda had to fit within like a square 408 by 408 pixels. Yeah. So you couldn't move too far. But yeah, it was just a fun little side project, like I did the icons last summer. You know, just I like having these little creative things. I mean, I do want to give David 99.9% of the credit for all this. I just came up with the poses, like what he should be doing. The panda, by the way, is called Pascal. He's called Pascal because Peacock was originally written in Pascal, because also Pascal kind of has the word Pical in it. Mm-hmm. And also Blaise Pascal was a famous mathematician. So that is Pascal the panda.
I think that if they ever come up with a iOS trivia pursuit, like those are some good questions, what the panda's name is and why. And I love this.
So it's just a silly thing. Why does a calculator come with stickers of a panda? Because nobody can tell me no, basically.
Nice. And I just sent five of them to my husband and my daughter, and they're wondering why. But what I like I said, I like to send stickers with effects. What did I send this one with? And this one, it looked like when I sent it with the Echo, they would move around. Like sometimes they would be sent on the side, and sometimes I don't know. And look there, you can see that it's from Peacock right there.
Yes, that was one of the things why I did it. So if somebody sends you one of these stickers, you think, oh, what lovely sticker pack has this come from?
Yes.
Oh, Peacock. Why exactly. Why Peacock? And I wanted just that brief moment. It's like the about screen. I want people to kind of look quizzical and go, what's happening now? Mm-hmm. The other thing is you can use those stickers in FaceTime and in the new camera effects stuff. So you can stick them to your face in AR and things like that.
That's important.
Because, you know.
Oh, I love that. Thank you so much. This has been such a great conversation. Thank you so much for all of your time. Thank you for PCalc on all the forums. Thanks for the beta and James Thompson of TAL.
TLA,
three-letter acronym systems.
Yeah. Easy to remember.
Yes, TLA.
I mean, this from people who are TWIT, I think.
Yes, exactly.
You have no leg to stand on.
Yes, yeah. No, I do not. It's true. And so where's the best place to follow you, your work? All of your apps are available in the App Store. Where's the best place to follow you?
So on Twitter, I'm James Thompson, and that's Thomson. That's probably the main place. I'm also James Thompson again on mastodon.social on Mastodon, if you're trying that out because you're fed up with Twitter, as many people are. Other than that, peacalc.com is the best place to find Peacalc on all my stuff.
And how often are you using Mastodon these days? I haven't been able to master Mastodon.
So I check in on it. I try and check in on it once a day. It's a lot of people have sort of set up accounts, and, you know, you can see people. It's not as active as Twitter. It's nicer than Twitter generally. There's not been quite as much abuse on it, although, you know, there has been some, I believe. It's an interesting experiment, and it's kind of feels like the early days of Twitter. You can see I'm posting about Patrick Stewart and useful things like that. Because I noticed the similarity of the two sets from the Star Trek film that I was watching that night. It's worth checking out. Twitter is probably the main place if you want to find me.
And do you do any podcasts regularly?
I do. I don't have any podcasts of my own, but I'm quite happy to guest on podcasts. So Jason Snell's Incomparable series of podcasts, I crop up every now and again on them. I crop up on some of the Relay FM ones as well, Clockwise. And the other one I do is the Rebound, because Lex Friedman is now a busy advertising executive and seems to not turn up a lot. And I get called in as his understudy. I don't know if I'm permanently going to be the understudy, but I get calls with like, we need you with like sometimes 20 minutes notice. And I'm like, yeah, I'll be on the podcast. That's fine.
Well, now everyone's going to call you now that they you know, and call you for their video podcast because you did great.
Well, thank you. I'm very conscious that I'm never looking in the right direction, which is it's kind of like I've placed your face as close to the camera right there so that I'm kind of looking at you. But that, yeah, it's an interesting experience. But I have enjoyed it immensely. So thank you very much for having me on.
Oh, thank you so much. And iOS Today is available to download anywhere podcasts are available. Go to twit.tv/iOS. You can email me, Megan@twit.tv. And I love getting your questions and your comments and your corrections. And you can watch live. Of course, we do this show around 9 a.m. Pacific. That's 12 p.m. Eastern, 1600 UTC. Every Tuesday morning. And I want to thank James Thompson again, and go check out PCalc. And if you already have it, go check out the game because it was really fun. Thanks so much for coming on, James.
Thanks again. It's been great.